I will say that this was a challenging one to prepare. This topic that we're up to now, that we started on really last time, is good and challenging. So hopefully we'll come away with some understanding of it. I will also note that, God willing, I will be in Israel for the next 2 Mondays. I put that in the email when I sent out the source sheets. Supposed to be flying next Motzei Shabbos, supposed to be coming back on Monday of the following week. So what that means is our next shiur, God willing, will be, I guess it is January 20th. 20th? Yeah, January 20th. Right, so the 6th and the 13th, I'm away. That's what it comes down to. Okay, so this is what we're getting ourselves into now. We're talking about the issue of overriding Shabbos on behalf of somebody who is a chola sheyesh bo sakana, right? Somebody who is dangerously ill. And we said last time that that's not even called desecrating Shabbos, right? We quoted the Or HaChaim in Parshas Kisisa saying that this is a fulfillment of Shabbos. It's not a violation of Shabbos. And I think the last thing that we had said was that even if you have the option of asking a non-Jew to do whatever it is that needs to be done, you don't ask the non-Jew, you do it yourself. We had two reasons for that. One reason is because otherwise the non-Jew sees that you're asking him instead of doing it yourself and thinks that it's not so urgent. Or alternatively, because we're worried that people are going to think that you need to ask a non-Jew. And even if there was a non-Jew available this time, who's to say that they'll be available next time? And people are going to go looking for someone who isn't Jewish. So we've said you do it. It is true that the rule is that Shabbos is dechuya rather than hutra, meaning that Shabbos is still technically a concern. We don't want to violate Shabbos, and if we had a safe way to minimize violation of Shabbos, we would. Nonetheless, in practice, we say, do whatever needs to be done, treat them the way that you would treat them during the week, as we talked about last time. That's the rule. I keep saying last time, it was really 2 weeks ago, because last time we had the special shiur about the medical conferences, but you know what I mean when I say last time. Okay, so what we're going to address, excuse me, is the issue of when and whether there's a need to override, whether there's a need to minimize overriding Shabbos when you have a choice of two actions. And the set of cases that we're going to see can be confusing, in part because the Nishmas Avram addresses them in different areas. So in order to try to simplify things, I made the table that you see on the source sheet at the top of the table. There's a table there with five cases. If you take a look at it, these are all cases in which you could do choice A or you could do choice B to try to save the patient. And choice A involves a more direct violation of Shabbos. Choice B reduces the violation of Shabbos. And the question is, which one am I supposed to do? And as you see in the third column, where I give you the psak, sometimes you're supposed to do A and sometimes you're supposed to do B. And then I showed you arguments why in the last column. Did everyone see that on the source sheet? Okay. So we're going to go through the table now just so you have a sense of what we're talking about. Cases I find really help crystallize things. So the first choice is something we've actually talked about. We've said that if you have a patient who needs to be in the dark, the light is keeping them from sleeping, the light is disturbing them, and their health is at risk. So we said you put out the light. But what if you have a choice? I could put out the light, or I could block the light with something. Or I could move the patient into a different room. So the rule then is choice B. You're better off, assuming you can safely move the patient, obviously. If there's any risk to the patient's health, that's not an option. But where you can safely move the patient, or you can just block the light, right? It turns out it's a kosher lamp. All you have to do is turn the thing. So in such a case, that's what we want you to do. Because we have a principle that says, Hakal hakal techila. You do whatever is most lenient first. that you take the activity that involves less violation of Shabbos, and that's relatively straightforward. Like if you just tell me that, I'm like, okay, I'm good with that. But then look at the next line. We've said that there are cases where a patient needs food cooked for them on Shabbos, and we said if it's a chola sheyesh bo sakana, someone who's dangerously ill, you cook for them. So the question arises, what if I could just knock on the neighbor's door and take their lunch? Right? The neighbor has Shabbos lunch ready. They have cholent. The doctor said, this patient needs cholent. Get them cholent stat. I don't actually know what stat means, but they say it on all the medical shows. So get the patient cholent stat, and there's cholent next door. So do I cook food, or do I get food from the neighbor? And here, we're going to see that the Nishmas Avram says, you cook the food. You don't take the neighbor's food. Why in the world not? You told me, hakal hakal tchila, you go with whatever is the lesser violation of Shabbos. So the answer we're going to see in the Nishmas Avram is that your neighbor has no obligation in hakal hakal tchila. Your neighbor has no obligation in this. You don't have, or to put it differently, there isn't grounds for you to cause your neighbor pain. You're justified in breaking Shabbos in order to provide food for this patient. So that's what you do. We'll see more about it, but that's your second case. Your third case, the doctor said the patient needs meat. All I have right now is non-shechted meat. What do I do? Do I shecht meat or do I give the patient treif? So the answer is, you shecht. Why am I shechting? Why don't I give the patient treif? Minimize my violation of Shabbos. So we're going to see the argument is going to be that it's because if you serve the patient treif, it looks like you actively chose to give the patient treif, and we don't want you to do that. So that's the third case. Fourth case. This is one of those cases that gets discussed a lot in the Gemara, but it can be confusing. There's a patient who needs figs. So far, we've already seen patients who need cholent. We've seen patients who need fresh meat. So now we're talking about patients who need figs. And the deal is that the patient needs three figs. I have two options. For those who are just joining, I'm going to put the link in the chat again for the source sheet so you can download them. We're on the source sheet, not on the Nishmas Avram sheet, and it's the fourth case in the table. What if the doctor said the patient needs to eat three figs? So on this tree, remember that cutting the figs from the tree is a violation of Shabbos. So on the tree, you have the following. You have one stem that has two figs attached. You have one stem that has one fig attached. And you have one stem that has three figs attached. So what do I do? Do I cut two stems in order to get the figs? Or do I cut, you know what? I think I'm getting the case wrong. We'll see the case inside. Let me skip that one because I think I'm getting my numbers wrong and I don't want to spend everybody's time on that right now. We'll get to it. The last case, we have a rule that says that if a baby is born on Shabbos, the bris is the next Shabbos. Right? Unless certain things, unless it was a C-section, unless whatever. But the basic rule is that you do the bris the following Shabbos. And the Gemara says that in the event that you don't have what's called an Izmel or Izemel on site with the baby, you carry the knife to the baby through the public domain on Shabbos in order to do the bris. That's the rule. What about taking the baby to the knife? Maybe we better if I take the baby to the knife, because carrying a baby who is living may be less of a violation of Shabbos than carrying a knife. So maybe I should take the baby to the knife instead of taking the knife to the baby. And there the rule is, no, you bring the knife to the baby anyway. So what emerges here is, hopefully you're as confused as I am, because if not, I'm not doing my job. But what you're seeing here is you have this set of five cases. We didn't really explain case number four, but the other ones in which I have two different courses of action I could follow. Either choice A, which has more of a violation of Shabbos, or choice B, which has less of a violation of Shabbos? And sometimes you're telling me choose choice A, and sometimes you're telling me choose choice B. So that's what I want to talk about is, how do you know which one? What? How do you decide which one you're supposed to do? So, we go back to our first case. The first case in the chart is where we left off last time. If you're looking at the Nishmas Avram, you want the second page of the Nishmas Avram PDF. We're going to come back to the first page, but we're not ready for it yet. Okay, it should be the page that has Shin Sadi Gimel at the top. Okay, does everyone have that? Those of you whose screens are not on, do you have Shin Sadi Gimel? I guess so. If you're using the old Nishmas Avram, the previous Nishmas Avram from previous sheets, download the one that I put up for this week, because there's a new page that's in the one for this week. So you don't want to use the old one. Okay, so if you're looking at Shin Sadi Gimel, page Shin Sadi Gimel, you want the right-hand column, the bottom of the column. It is 9 lines up from the bottom is what we're up to. He says the following. This is the Nishmas Avram talking. Vihine, Kosev HaMishneh Brura Al Hadin B'Shulchan Aruch. The Mishneh Brura writes, commenting on the law in the Shulchan Aruch. Vezel Shono. Here's what he says. Ayin b'Rambam, b'Feresh HaMishnayo. See the Rambam in his commentary to the Mishnah. On that Mishnah that says we extinguish a flame for a patient on Shabbos, the Rambam writes the following. Shekasav didavka b'shi'i efshar lahotzi achole l'makom acher o lahastir ha'or mimenu. The heter of you may put out the light on Shabbos is specifically if you don't have the option of A, moving the patient, or B, blocking the light, right? This is the first case in the table that I gave you. Verotza lomar, al yedei kfiasa kli al gabav. When we talk about blocking the light, we mean by overturning a vessel over it, right? That's the original kosher lamp right there. You overturn a vessel on it. Oh, al yedei hotza l'cheder acher, or taking it to a different room. Di lav hachi, because if it was not true, if you had such an option to do those things, Bevada yoser tov letaltal muktza milavrol al iser kavia. It would certainly be better to move the lamp, even if your lamp is muktza, than it would be to extinguish it. So the Rambam says that when it comes to extinguishing a light for a patient, we follow the principle of hakal hakal tchila. You do that which is more lenient first. That's your better option. Okay? So that brings me to the second case in the table, which is, what about if I have a, if the doctor says the patient needs cholent, the patient's not going to need cholent, because if the patient has to wait for me to put up cholent now, you know, they're not long for this world, and by the time the cholent's done, it's going to be after Shabbos anyway. So the patient needs something that's cooked a little faster. But in any case, the point is the doctor says the patient needs freshly cooked food, and I have a choice. Either I could cook it myself, or my neighbor already has it. I could just take it from the neighbor. So based on what we just said about extinguishing the light, that you're supposed to minimize what you're doing, minimize your violation of Shabbos, I would have said, go take the neighbor's food. But lo and behold, that is not what we do. And here I bring you to the first sheet in the Nishmas Avram that I sent out this week. This is taken from the Nishmas Avram in Orach Chaim Shin Yud Ches. On your page, you should see the number 11. Do you see that? You see the number 11? Okay. So this is part of a presentation of cooking on Shabbos for a patient who is dangerously ill. The Nishmas Avram says the following. Lahatrid Shachin. To bother a neighbor. Kosev Hashmir Shabbos Kehilchasa. He quotes Rav Neuwirth in Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa. Mutter levashalav urchola shevesakana shadarush lo ochel cham o shesiya chama. You are allowed to cook on Shabbos for a patient who is dangerously ill, who needs hot food or a hot drink. Ela sheha'amadasam l'rishus ha'chole tigrom l'shach... I'm sorry, I jumped. The af im eitzal shcheino yeshno ochel cham ushesia chama. Even if the neighbor has hot food or a hot drink, you're able to cook even if the neighbor has a ready supply. Ela sheha'amadasam l'rishus ha'chole tigrom l'shachein tsa'ar v'sevel gadol. If getting it from the neighbor would cause the neighbor pain and suffering. Kigon, for example, shishcheino yashen v'yesh tzarech la'iro. So let's say it's the middle of the night and the neighbor is sleeping. You need to wake up the neighbor. Don't wake up the neighbor. Make food fresh instead. Oh, shahala yishoer lelo ochel ushesia chama b'Shabbos. Or you would be taking the neighbor's food and the neighbor would now not have hot food for Shabbos. That's what the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa writes. He says, in the event that taking the neighbor's food would mean waking up the neighbor or would mean depriving the neighbor of a Shabbos meal, better for you to cook. Now, on the face of it, that sounds really strange. Right? Which is worse? Breaking Shabbos, cooking actively on Shabbos, or waking up your neighbor? Now, maybe it depends on who your neighbor is. But the general principle, I would have thought, would be saving lives is your overriding priority. Clearly, it's not so. So how do you deal with it? So he writes, Ubeha'arasham, in a footnote, the Shmir Shabbos Kelchasa says the following, Va'af lahasovrim sheshabbos rak dichuya v'lo hutra eitz l'pikuach nefesh. Even within the view, which is what we hold, that Shabbos is dechuya, and therefore we're supposed to reduce our violation of Shabbos. Nonetheless, he says, I'm going to give you three reasons why this is so. Mikom hakom, he says, still, ein chiyuv lehitzta'er ele b'shvil hatzalas nefesh, velo kidei limnoa malacha hanaseis beheter letzorach pikuach nefesh. He says, there is no obligation to put yourself through pain to avoid malacha, which is justified for the sake of pikuach nefesh. In other words, it's not that the neighbor is being asked to cause himself pain in order to save a life. The patient's being saved either way. Right? The patient is being saved whether by my food or whether by the neighbor's food. So it's an issue of, does my neighbor have to go through pain in order to keep me from doing this on Shabbos? That's his first point. Ukmosha mutter lechol adam larog b'Shabbos es hababa machteres ligno v'mon chaveiro ve'en alav shum chiyuv lefaiso b'mamon kedei limnar ritzicha b'chilol Shabbos. He says, similarly, you have somebody who breaks and enters into a house, you're able to kill him, even on Shabbos, in order to save this other person's property. That's the rule. I see somebody burglarizing a house, I am able to kill him in order to save the resident, even on Shabbos, when you're not allowed to kill, you're allowed to do that. And we don't say, you know what, pay the guy off instead to keep him from stealing from the house. There's no such obligation. So his first point is that the reason why, in this case, we're choosing choice A, cook instead of getting the neighbor's food, is that the neighbor has no obligation to avoid you cooking on Shabbos, such that the neighbor would have to undergo pain for that purpose. That's number one. Number two, he says, v'gam nira, it also appears, de'af im b'pikuach nefesh rak d'chuya hi ha-Shabbos v'lo hutra, even if we say, which we do, that Shabbos is d'chuya, it's pushed off, but not hutra, mikol makom mishum chumra d'hatzalas nefashos kim'at sha'asu osa barov ha-makomos ki'ilu mamash hutra. He says, this is the weirdest d'chuya out there. Meaning, normally in halacha, when we say that a halachic requirement is dechuya, so that means we really try to avoid violating it if we at all can. Example, right? I quoted in my drasha on Shabbos, tuma dechuya betzibur, that the rule is that in the event that the kohenim are tamei or everything is tamei, you do the avoda in the Beis Hamikdash, and that's what you go with. However, it's dechuya, not hutra. And therefore, if you have a tahor option, that's what you use. When it comes to Shabbos, on the other hand, we, even though we say dechuya, We keep saying, yeah, but you should just break Shabbos, right? Like we said in the beginning this time. We said that even if you have a non-Jew who could do it, nonetheless, do it yourself in order to avoid causing causing a problem in the future. We even though Shabbos is hutra for pikuach, is dechuya for pikuach nefesh, we're pretty lenient on doing things on Shabbos. That's his second point. Clear? And then his third point. V'gam nira, it also appears, d'benidon d'idav, that in our case, the cooking case, efshur d'yish lachsho sheyiyu chas v'sholom ka'ela asher yimne umili hikanes el chola sheyesh bo sakana. He says, you know what's going to happen? If you're going to start taking the neighbor's food for the sake of this patient, the result is going to be people aren't going to want to do bikur cholim. Like, I'm now running at risk that if I go in to see how the patient is doing, I may not have lunch for Shabbos. So he says, you run the risk that you give a disincentive for people to look in on these people. Because they don't want to give up their lamp, they don't want to give up their hot water. That's what he writes. Shuv ra'isi b'shut mishneh sachir nun beis desover b'pshitus shelo kidvareinu. He says, the truth of the matter is that I saw the Chuvos Mishneh Sakhir who disagrees with what we're saying. And he disagrees with somebody else who wasn't sure about this. But the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa says, I don't think he's correct. And then he goes on and he quotes others who discuss the issue. But this is case number two on our list of choice A versus choice B. And here what we're saying is you have a way to do it that that would involve less violation, just get the food from the neighbor. And yet we're saying don't follow hakal hakal tchila, don't follow the principle of minimizing your violation of Shabbos because it's not your neighbor's responsibility. That's the idea. You're going to break Shabbos, but it's justified. Remember, we said last time, the Or HaChaim, he said it's not called breaking Shabbos at all. This is a mitzvah. So that's your second case. Clear? We good? Okay. Trying to think of which way we end up going here. All right. If you take a look in back in the Nishmas Avram on page 2, I think we're going to go in order in the Nishmas Avram, and that will naturally bring up the other cases. So that's how we're going to do it. So the Nishmas Avram, I'm just looking for myself just to make sure. Yeah, no, it's here. It's coming up. We're good. So the Nishmas Avram continues to talk about pikuach nefesh, right? We're still within the category of what you do for a chola sheyesh bo sakana, someone who's dangerously ill. So you see where it says gimel mitzvah pikuach nefesh? He says mitzvah pikuach nefesh ayidei grama o akum, saving lives using grama, indirectly causing the violation of Shabbos, or by asking a non-Jew. So he says kiyum mitzvah pikuach nefesh ayidei grama o akum rei lahalon dot dot dot. He says I'm going to discuss that later on. I'm not discussing that here. This is just to tell you, yes, I know this is a topic, but we're not getting to it yet. Then he says, "Afilu asa malacha lelo tzorech." Even if, in saving a life, you do something that was not really necessary, that's not called violation of Shabbos. And now you'll see what he means. Kosev hashut maharshag. He quotes the maharshag. Nirali lomer davar chadash. I want to say something that I think is new. Dim yesh kan chola sheyesh bo sakana b'shavas. If you have somebody who's dangerously ill, ubederach mashal tzarachu leechol te'ena achas. Let's say he has to eat a fig. That's what the doctor ordered, his figs. One fig. V'yesh kan te'ena telusha. And he has a fig that is separate from the tree, so there's no violation of Shabbos necessary. He has a fig just sitting there waiting for him to eat it. V'halach ish acher, but along comes somebody else who knows that a fig is needed. V'katzar lo te'ena acheres min amachubar. And he cuts a fig off a tree. V'nasan lo le'echol, and he gives it to the guy to eat. V'lo nasan lo ha te'ena ha telusha. He doesn't give him the fig that was separated from the tree. So the patient needs a fig, and instead of giving the patient the severed fig, which is entirely mutter, he cuts a fig off a tree and gives it to him. Granted that this guy did something he wasn't supposed to do. He should have just given the fig that didn't involve taking something from the tree. Since he had the other fig, the separated fig, he should not have taken the new one. Mikomakom still, im avar va'asa lo asa iser de'oraisa. The guy who does it is not violating a biblical law because it is a life-saving act. That's the rule. All the different liabilities that come with violation of biblical law do not apply here. Since he, at the end of the day, is trying to do this for the sake of a dangerously ill patient, this is not called Chilul Shabbos. He was trying to save lives. This issue comes up all the time. Not with figs, necessarily. I don't think doctors tend to prescribe figs. But it does come up in terms of situations where somebody is going to violate Shabbos and maybe there was something unnecessary about it. Example, you have a dispatcher who is sending people out, you know, for Hatzalah on Shabbos. And let's say they find out, the first vehicle gets to the scene, and they find out it's a false alarm, it's not necessary, or it's all taken care of, or whatever it is. There are four other people who are getting in their cars to drive there on Shabbos. So do you tell them, no need, false alarm? And that you violate Shabbos in a derabbanan way in order to avoid them driving there? Or do we say, no, what they're doing is an act of trying to save lives on Shabbos. They're operating under misunderstanding. They think that the patient needs them, but they're doing an act to save lives. Rav Asher Weiss has this in a tshuva, and I believe the answer is that you do not call them back. I believe the answer is that I'd have to look at the tshuva again, but I'm pretty sure he says, don't call it off. Let them, they'll go to the spot and do what they're supposed to do. They didn't violate Shabbos, certainly on a biblical level. Okay. So that's in terms of doing the malacha unnecessarily. And then he gives you one of the cases that I mentioned. This is the fig case that's in the chart. So now we get to our figs. Vine kosev ha'avnei nezer. The Avnei Nezer says, also known as the Igle Tal. V'had de mevur b'menachos. He quotes you the Gemara Menachos, Samach Dalet Amad Aleph. D'chole she'amduhu l'shnei grogros. You have a patient who is ill. And the doctors say, this man needs two dried figs. V'yesh shnayim ba'oketz echod, v'shalosh ba'oketz acher. There are two figs on one stem. There are three figs on a different stem. He only needs two. So the rule is, korsin ha'oketz sheyesh bo shnayim v'lo sheyesh bo shalosh. So cut the one that has two figs attached. Don't cut the one that has three figs on it because you don't need the third fig. The third one wouldn't be for the sake of the patient. He says, since we say that that it's better for you to take the one that just has the two, it's not clear in the poskim if there are two figs on one stem, and there are two figs that are on two stems. In other words, there are three different stems. One stem has two figs, and then the other two each have one. You follow? The stems are stems A, B, and C. Stem A has two figs. Stem B has one fig. Stem C has one fig. I need two. So we don't say we don't say that you're not allowed to cut stems B and C, right? It's just like the case of, somebody who does something that wasn't really necessary. He says, it's permitted, because it's all being done for the necessity of saving the patient. Af shemarbe bibitzira, even though you are now cutting extra stems. So the Avnei Nezer says, regarding the case of the figs, he says, you're really supposed to cut just one stem where that's an option, but you didn't violate halacha if you cut two stems. So he writes. And then he says, Ayin heitev shulchan aruch shin chav ches tez zayin. V'tira shekeinu. He says, look at the shulchan aruch, which you can, because look at the other sheet I gave you, where I brought you the shulchan aruch. It's source base on that sheet. The sheet, same sheet that has the table on it. Everyone have it? Okay. He says, Amdu lishtei grogros. If they evaluate that the person needs two figs, Velo matzu ela shtei grogros b'shnei oktzin v'gimel ba'oketz echad. And what they found were two figs on two stems and three figs on another stem. Now you want to know why I was confused when I was giving you the table about which, you know, how many figs and stems we were talking about. We've seen way too many cases. But this is the case. This is the Shulchan Aruch's case. The guy needs two figs. You have three stems. One stem has one fig, a second stem has one fig, and a third stem has three figs. All right? So it's one, one, and three. So now it's a really interesting question. Because on the one hand, I could get two figs by cutting the first two stems. Robbie, you were going to say? Yeah.
I wondered if one of the, that's just me who is preparing, what if one of the figs wasn't good? It would pay you to take the one with three and you could discard one rather than having to recut.
Right. So I mean, clearly,
we have to check figs that are sometimes they're infested or yeah. bad or whatever.
Right. So clearly we are dealing in the realm of hypothetical figs. Because you're right. I would have been concerned that maybe one of them is infested. So you're correct. You're living very practically. We're dealing with theoretical figs. Theoretical figs don't have worms. So so I have again three stems A, B, and C. They have one fig, and three figs. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, "Karsim ha'ogetz sheyesh bo gimel." You cut the stem that has three figs on it. Better to cut one stem than to cut two stems, even though now there's an extra fig that you cut. V'im hayu beis ba'oketz echad, v'gimel ba'oketz echad. And in the event that there are two figs, on one stem and three figs on the other, lo yichrasu ala ha'oketz sheyesh bo shnayim. You only cut the one that has the two figs. Because, again, we want to minimize what we're doing. Now, I brought you the Rama in the last line in Beis, who says, by the way, v'imadavar bahul, if you're in a rush to do this, ein medaktikin b'kach. Don't sit there being careful about, well, I should cut this one, I should cut that one. Shel yavo lidei dichoy v'iku, because you don't want to get into a situation where you don't do the job, and this poor guy's waiting for his fix. That's not a good idea. But assuming that it isn't time sensitive, what we say in the Shulchan Aruch is minimize the malacha you are doing. Right? Try to use the fewest violations of Shabbos and try, where you can, to only cut the figs that you need. And if it's a choice between more figs than I need or more malachos, then avoid more malachos. Right? The case where you need two figs and one of them has three and one of them has two, then I'm going to choose to cut the one with two. However, if it's one has three and then one has one and one has one, then we're saying cut the three and do just one deed. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. So now back in the Nishmas Avram, he was referring you to that just to show you that we are careful to minimize what we're doing. I'm going to come back to that case. But right now, I should continue in the Nishmas Avram first. So we are on the page that has Shin Sadi Dalet at the top. We're on the second line. V'chein mashma b'rashba v'ran b'chidushav reish perak avalazer demila. You know what? We actually do need to see the Rashba on the sheet. Okay, so let's see the Rashba on the sheet. It's source Gimel on the sheet. This is, Toby, you have it?
Yes.
Okay. This is the case that we had on the in the chart as case number 5. Mivio b'Shabbos. The Rashba is commenting on the words in the Gemara that say, you bring the knife on Shabbos, even through an area where there's no Eruv. So Hikshu b'Tosfos. Tosfos asked, Lama yavi izem el etzel tinok? Why you bring the knife to the kid? Yavo tinok, it should be yavi tinok, etzel izemel. Right? Bring the kid to the knife. Deleka el shvus. That is only rabbinically prohibited. Da adam chai noseyes atzmo lekulei alma. He says everybody agrees that living things, apparently even if they can't walk, nonetheless, living things carry themselves. So he says, I don't understand. If living things carry themselves, then you'd be better off carrying the kid, so that's only rabbinically prohibited, as opposed to carrying the knife. That's Tosus' question. Silin source Gimel. Vitirtsu, Tosus answered, Dehacha b'maya skinon, what's our case? B'she'en sham menika ela imo. Are you still hearing me? I got a message that my connection is unstable. You good?
I'm hearing you.
Okay. If I'm not, let me know. He says, this is unclear. Tosfos says, I jumped. He says, Dahagamay askin, and what's our case? B'she'en sham menika ela imo, where there is no one who can nurse the kid other than his mother. V'nim tzatzarech le'imo la'achar mila. So he's going to need his mother after the bris, in order to nurse. V'imo mesukenes she'en yecholo lavo etzlo. The mother is not healthy. It's 8 days after the bris. It's not great for her to travel. And then you're going to end up needing to bring the baby to the mother anyway after the bris. I think I am getting the internet problems. So I'm just going to shift rooms for a second. Hang on 1 second. Okay. So everybody has where we are in the Rashba? Moving rooms didn't throw anybody off. So the Rashba quotes Tosfos, who asked the question, why are we bringing the knife to the kid? Why don't we bring the kid to the knife? And Tosfos' answer was, we're talking about a very particular situation. We're talking about a situation where the mother is going to be needed to nurse the child, and she can't go to the moel. And therefore, if you bring the child to the moel for the bris, you're just going to bring the child back to the mother. So that's silly. Just bring the knife to the child. The child's with the mother anyway. And that reduces your violations of Shabbos. That's Tosfos' answer. And he says further, if you're going to bring the child back to the mother after the bris, ul'achar mila harayu chole. After the bris, the child is a chole, ukekafus dami. He's considered like an object. He's immobile. He's like something who's tied up. And therefore, umod Rabbi Nassan bekafus. And Rabbi Nassan will agree that if Rabbi Nassan was the one who's lenient about carrying somebody who's alive, he'll say if he's tied up, then it's like carrying an object. And that's a violation of Shabbos. So Tosfos says, the reason why I carry the mila knife to the baby is to avoid a situation in which I'm going to need to carry the baby back to the mother after the bris. Clear? We good?
Yeah. Just okay. You've been freezing intermittently.
Still, huh? I don't know why. I'm going to have to see what's going on with my computer because that shouldn't be happening. But clearly it is. All right. Well, it's not something I'm solving right now. Unfortunately. Something's running, but I don't know what. Okay. So hopefully you can be able, you'll be able to follow. The Rashba continues. And he says, are we good? Do you hear me? So the Rashba continues and says, Ve'enu mechuver be'enai. He says, Tosfos is not clear to me. D'mikol makom achshav eno kekafus, lama nechalal olav achshav. The Rashba is bothered. He says, I don't understand. Right now, before the bris, the child is not like someone who's tied up. The child is able to move. And therefore, right now, carrying the child is less severe than bringing the knife. So therefore, what we should say is, Yavi tinok etzel izemel, bring the baby to the knife. Kevin dehashta mi'aleka ela shavus, because right now you're just violating a derabanan. The demala achar mila teheisham menika, and who knows, maybe after the bris is over, there will be someone who can nurse the child, and you won't need to worry about bringing the child to the mother. That's his argument. Va'afilu dalsos medina ne'ulos, and even if you'll tell me, there is no traffic through the land. The walls of the city are locked, no one is allowed in, and therefore there won't be anybody who can nurse the child. Mikomakom still, kol she'efshar achshav belo chilul, nasa achshav belo chilul. If it's possible to act right now without desecrating Shabbos, that's what we used to do. U'la'achar mila, and after the bris, came into lo efshar nevi'eyo etel imo, since we don't have a choice, then we'll bring the child to his mother. De'ha'hutra etzla malachazu, because that is in fact entirely permitted for him. Does everyone understand the Rashba's question? The Rashba says, you're telling me that because overall, if I bring the child, then I'm going to need to bring the child the other way. He says, you're looking at it wrong. Evaluate your current action first. Your current action is that you need to bring the child for the bris or bring the knife to the child. And the more lenient way to do it is to bring the child to the moel. That's the more lenient option. What's going to happen after the bris? Maybe there will be a nursemaid available. And if not, then it will be permitted for you to carry the baby because it's pikuach nefesh. Why am I not doing it that way? That's the Rashba's question. Ela yesh lomar. So the Rashba first says, I'll tell you why. He says, my first answer is, because the idea that it's less bad to carry a living thing doesn't apply when you're carrying a baby who is 8 days old. An eight-day-old baby cannot walk, is not strong enough to lift himself, and therefore it's already like carrying an object. So he says, your entire premise is wrong. That's his first answer. And then he says, "V'yesh mishatirei." Some have answered, "Gam betosvos." Dilah Rabbi Eliezer, "Kevin shatora hitira machshirin v'lo tarchinan v'lo mishaninan." This is the key. He says some have answered that what Tosvos believes here is that once the Torah permits you all of the different backup steps to be able to carry out the bris, you just do it. You don't worry about how to minimize it. You just do it. And you know that, because the Gemara gives you a story, and he gives you an example of this from the story itself regarding bringing the baby and bringing the knife. So the Rashba says, I'm skipping this paragraph in the interests of time, but what the Rashba is saying right now is that once you are permitted to override Shabbos for the bris, you don't have to figure out what's the best way to override Shabbos. That's the idea. Last paragraph in Source Gimel. This is key now. V'im Tomar, you might ask, am I low? Why am I not obligated to minimize violation of Shabbos? V'ha'amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, didn't Reish Lakish say, kol makom sha'ata motzei aseh v'lo saseh, anytime you're in a position where you have two competing mitzvos, you have a mitzvah say that says do X. You have a mitzvah lo say that says don't do X. Im ata yachol lekayim eshneya mutav. If you can fulfill both, that's great. V'im lav, but if you can't, yavo asay v'yidchez lo say. Then we have a rule. Asay overrides lo say. I have principles for how to do things. So he says, why am I not trying to satisfy both things first? You're telling me, no, there's no need to satisfy both things. Why isn't there? So he says, Yesh Lomar, you could say the following answer. And this is what I put into the chart, the table that's on your sheet, in the last box in line 5. He says, Yesh Lomar, Desha'ani Hacha, you could say this case is different. De'i'efshar shalo lidchos mi'a legabe mi'la atzma. He says, you've been avoiding the elephant in the room. The elephant in the room is you're worried all about, am I bringing the knife to the baby or the baby to the knife? You're doing bris milah on Shabbos. You're already overriding Shabbos. That ship has sailed. So you're now worried about you know, these sub-issues. You're already doing a milah on Shabbos. Vehilkach, and therefore, af hi umachshireha kemila arichta damu. He says the whole business of what gets carried where is just a subcategory of the bris that already overrides Shabbos. So this is a different case. When it comes to extinguishing the lamp versus blocking the light, then yes, we want to minimize what you're doing. That's true. But when it comes to the what I'm going to do for the Mila, the chilul is happening anyway for the overall Mila. And what you're doing is therefore licensed for the sake of the Mila. That's what he says. And he goes on in that vein. But that's the statement that the Rashba makes. So now with that, armed with that, okay, we've now seen excuse me. We've now seen the fig case. We've seen four out of the five in the table. The only one we haven't seen is case number three. But we've seen case number one, extinguishing the lamp. We've seen case number two, cooking the food versus getting food from the neighbor. We've seen the case of cutting the stems, and we do try to reduce the violation. And we've seen case number five, where we don't try to reduce the violation. So back in the Nishmas Avram, when he quoted you this Rashba, the Nishmas Avram that you want is, again, page Shin Sadi Dalid. And specifically, where was it? Yeah, well, you might as well go to the second line on the page. V'chein mashma b'rashba. He says what we just said, which is that we do try to reduce the violation where we can. He says that's also implied by the Rashba and the Ran in his Chidushim in Reish Perak Rabbelezer Demila. Shetirtzu kushyas atosvos. They answer Tosos's question. She'efshar laseis atinok ela Ismail. You could bring the baby to the knife. Mishum desov sof yitztarech l'chalal Shabbos b'mila, because you're violating Shabbos for the bris anyway. Lo ichbas lan betosef es chilul, so we don't care if you're doing a little more chilul. Ve'av Tosvos lo ikshu ela mishum she'adayin lo chilul Shabbos b'mila. Even Tosvos himself only asked because you haven't overridden Shabbos yet for the bris mila. And then he says, Ukiagavna mechalik perek elu devarim, desha'ani machshirei mitzvah shalachar shchita shekvar dachsa shchita es hashavas. And he says, similarly, we have this idea in the Gemara in Psachim, where they're talking about backup steps that are necessary for a shchita, where shchita overrides Shabbos. If Erev Pesach is Shabbos, like this year's calendar, right? So when we bring the Karban Pesach this year, we're going to override Shabbos in order to shecht the Karban Pesach. And once we're overriding Shabbos to shecht the Karban Pesach, we'll also override it for all of the backup steps that are necessary as part of the process. That's the idea. Everyone have where we are? We're up to Vav Kuf Lamed. V'kasha lahavin. He says, this is hard to understand, though. Halo b'mena, or v'kasha lan, maybe. Halo b'menachos u'b'shulchan aruch sham kasuv. Da'afilu shte grogros b'shnei uktsin v'gimel ba'oketz echad, korsim ha'oketz shiyesh bo gimel. He says, wait a minute. I have a gemara in Menachos, and this is what we brought in the Shulchan Aruch, that where you need two figs, if there are two figs, but they're on two different stems, and then there are three figs that are on a third stem, you only cut the third one. V'lechora kol shekein b'mikra shel avnei nezer shetzvichem lichros davka es ha'oketz im shtei agrogros. So that means that in the avnei nezer's case, where it was one, one, and two, you should really be just cutting the one that has the two. How could you tell me that the person who cuts two stems didn't violate Shabbos? The answer is, when you do it for a patient who is dangerously ill, that's not called violating Shabbos. So that's his overarching principle. Even though we prefer that you minimize your violation of Shabbos, if a person doesn't minimize, that's not called breaking Shabbos. Last paragraph in this section. Kosei b'Kiryat Sefer. Okay, this is a book. This is not the place. It was written in Kiryat Sefer. V'chein kol mi shemesukan ma'achilin oso dvarim asurim. If somebody is dangerously ill, we'll feed them non-kosher. V'nira, dahad armina ma'achilin akal akal tchila lohavi ele midirabanan. This is a remarkable statement. He says the rule that you try to minimize your violation of Shabbos is actually in itself a dirabanan rule. Because he says, biblically, nothing is an obstacle to pikuach nefesh. He says, the truth of the matter is, this rule that we have of try to break Shabbos in the least way possible is itself a din de rabbanon, not a din de oraisa. That's a fascinating idea, which would take us off into another direction, but that's what he notes. Okay, so hopefully what we have so far, what people follow, is that this isn't a clear topic, right? If that's all you got so far, then you got the message of the last 53 minutes. It's not straightforward in terms of where do I say to minimize and where do I not say to minimize. We're saying that if you didn't minimize, you didn't violate Shabbos biblically. That's number one. Number two, we're saying that where you personally are able to do it in a better way, you should choose to do it in a better way. Hakal akal tchila. However, not where it's going to cause pain to the neighbor. Right? And not where chilul is happening for this core thing anyway, like the case of the bris milah. Now, we haven't gotten into one case, and that's case number three. But I don't think we can do it in 6 minutes. I think it's a tall order to do it in 6 minutes. So I feel bad because we have another 2 weeks before we're going to be able to learn next. But I don't think rushing it is going to do us any favors. So what we're going to have to do is come back to it, God willing, on January 20th. I will give, hopefully, enough of a background and review that we'll still be able to get this next. And we'll pick up with that, God willing, on January 20th. Okay?
Yisiyah Tova.
Thank you. Thanks very much.